This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Last weekend, one of the central things that we really discussed was the element to morality, to living a moral life. We talked about the importance of being able to clinically decide what's moral and what isn't as being the first element. Unless you have a mechanism of analyzing a moral issue, you're lost to start with. The second was an ability to feel strongly about that morality. And the third one, which was the most difficult one of all, and we really left it just having touched the concept and not solving it really, is, okay, so you've pinpointed what has to be done and you feel strongly that it should be done, but how do you do it? And that's the area where most of us fall down. The gap between the knowledge and the action. Most people don't think that what they're doing is right. They know it's wrong, but what can they do? That's how it goes. When we do something wrong, when we do an avera, when we don't live up to an aim, to a particular goal we've set ourselves, it's not because we've changed our minds and we consider the goal is no longer important. It's because something goes wrong between our knowing what we're supposed to do and our actually doing it. And some of us have discussed this over the past few weeks. The tremendous problem that this is in trying to bridge that gap, that once you've decided that something needs to be done, how do you do it? We discussed it a little bit already at the Shalosh Shudos, and we were discussing Ribson Chazisel Ziv and his stress on self-discipline, which he saw as the key to getting anywhere, because without that there's nothing. And that's something that I feel particularly strongly, that without that there is nothing for those people who want to go places. For those people who just want to be part of the scene and are happy to be pedestrians, there's no problem. You don't need self-discipline. All you have to do is you have to stand outside the underground at the station of your work at the beginning of rush hour and just aim towards the door more or less, and you'll be shoved out at the other end at your station of getting off, and the crowd will take you home. You don't have to worry. You don't have to be a big chacham. But if we're talking about developing greatness, if we're talking about developing special characteristics, which is what, as far as I'm concerned, Torah is all about. I don't know about you, but I'm not prepared to waste my time teaching or practicing a Torah which is a spectator's sort of pedestrian kind of thing. You know, you do this and you do that, and if you do it all nicely, it gets packaged up, and one day you'll get put in a box and dispatched to Olam Haba. That's not how it works. That's how it works for many, but it just doesn't fascinate me. It just has no interest for me, if that's what Yiddishkeit is. Yiddishkeit is changing yourself, growing, developing stature, being able to say, this is where I am now, this is where I want to be in a year's time, and getting there. Just as one can do at university, you can say, I'm starting off with nothing, and in 3 years I want a BA, and in 5 years I want an LLB, and then I'm going to start learning medicine, and 7 years later I'm going to be a doctor. And if you have a little bit of self-discipline, you can do it. No problem. You can do it in university, you can do it academically, you can do it materially with a bit of siyata dishmaya. You can say, I'm dedicating myself, this year I want to make 10,000 rand, and next year 50,000 rand, and the next year 100,000 rand. And if you're prepared to be Moslem Nefesh for it, you'll probably do it. It can be done. It's feasible. You can plan a budget, and you can make yourself a goal, and all things being equal, you can reach it. Is it possible that a human being can do that with his own character too? And can say, this is who I am today, and I'm not satisfied with myself. Not just with the little things I'm doing. It's easy to start doing new kunsten. As I always say, you can train a monkey, a baboon, to do that too. You don't have to be a mensch to say, I want to start keeping a 5 extra mitzvahs next month. You can train your dog to do the same. That's not Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit is, I want to be a different person next month. I want to think differently. I want to analyze differently. I want to respond differently. I want to feel differently. Can I work on the same basis and say, I want to get from here to there and make sure that I do it? The answer is yes. You can and you must. That's what it's all about. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoyel Meitcha. What after all does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from you except just that? That's all he wants from you, is to grow and to develop and to do just that. Yirushalayim is the dynamics of growing, of deepening your perception of what the Ribbono Shel Olam is and what he wants from you. That's all God wants from you in the final analysis. Everything else is just the means of getting there. But that's what He really wants from you. To become a greater person and a better person. Not just on the surface, but deep, deep down, that even your subconscious is changing. That's what Freud could never understand. You don't have to start with your subconscious and say that that's what limits you forever. That's what limits you as long as you don't change it. That you can actually govern your subconscious. You can actually develop and build on it, so that your subconscious responses will develop and will change and will grow, that you'll become a greater person, not just on the surface. That's Yiddishkeit, that's what it's all about. Oy, but it's hard. It's terribly hard. And that one has to face up. And there one has to decide very honestly with oneself, does one want to be the pedestrian who gets on in town and gets off in the suburbs and the next morning does the other way around, and you're flowing with a stream which doesn't require much effort? Then it's very simple. I'll tell you, move into a good neighborhood, join a good shul, and join a couple of the clubs and things, and you're off. It'll be okay. They'll look after you. Just do what everybody else does, and there's no pressure on you. There's nothing. Everything's fine. You're taken care of. But if we're talking about developing your own uniqueness, if we're talking about developing your own personality, about growing in your own special way, then I've got sad news for you. You're going to be going against the stream from tonight until the day you die. That's it. If you're going to commit yourself to that kind of life, it's nothing but solace all the way. But you get there. And exactly in the same way as the big businessman who wants to make his 100,000 next year and his million the year after has to trample over an awful lot of people to get there, so you have to trample over an awful lot to get to become a mensch. But it's not trampling over an awful lot of people, it's trampling over yourself quite a lot. And just treating yourself with the same kind of disdain that the big business magnate deals with his competitors. Don't wrap yourself up in cotton wool if that's where you plan to get, because you won't make it. If you're deciding that that's what you want to do, and it requires a commitment, it requires work, it requires thoughtfulness, and it requires constant alertness, you can't give up for a moment. Tough, it's rough. And what I want to talk to you tonight about is that gap. Okay, assuming that everybody in this room said, yeah, sounds a good idea, let's become something. Okay, it's rough, it's hard, doesn't matter, we're stimulated, it's Rosh Chodesh Elul, we're going to make it, this Rosh Hashanah is going to be like no Rosh Hashanah hitherto, we're going to reach Rosh Hashanah, changed people, and from there onwards the sky is the limit, we're going to become Gedolei Yisrael in our own right. Every man and woman sitting here is going to become something special and outstanding. Let's say that's what we all decide tonight. How do we make sure that we're at the davening tomorrow morning? That's the real question. It's easy to make these promises to oneself and these undertakings to oneself at an inspired moment, whether during a shiur or during Elul or during Rosh Hashanah, or if one's really, really thick-skinned, at least during the closing minutes of Neilah. Ribbono Shel Olam, give me a good year and I promise you it'll be different. And it's the same. What goes wrong? What happens? At the beginning of the Sedra, there's some strange inconsistencies. We'll deal just with one or two of them. The beginning of the Sedra is very frightening. It's perfectly apt for the opening of Elul. Ra'ei Anochi Nosein Lifneichem Hayom. See, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm putting before you today. Hayom means not just then, but every day of your life. This is what is before you. One should almost read it as one wakes up in the morning. What? Brocha uklala. Blessing and curse. Nothing in between. There are very few things in life that are either black or white, that have no grey in between. This seems to be one of them. Every morning you should see Hayom, today I put before you a future of blessing and happiness, and a future of klala, a future of curse and misery. Es ha-brocha, what is the brocha? Asher tishmu'u el mitzvois Hashem Elokeichem asher anochi mitzaveschem hayom. That you should listen to the mitzvahs of Hashem which I'm commanding you today. That's the brocha. Do that and you're okay. It doesn't say you have to practice the mitzvahs. Normally when it says you must listen, like Ekev asher tishmu'un, It says, in last week's Sedra, whenever it uses the word Tishmu'un, usually it's followed by some action. Listening is not enough. If you, and it will be as a result of listening to these mishpatim, ushamaltem va'asisem oisom, and in addition to listening, you will keep them and do them, then etc., etc. Here there are no other conditions. All you need to do is hear. Sounds very easy. Asher tishmu el mitzvahs Hashem elokeichem asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom. Full stop. Then you've got the brocha. You just have to listen. Baklala and the curse. Im loy tishmu el mitzvahs Hashem elokeichem. If you don't listen to the mitzvahs of the Ribbono shel Olam. But it doesn't stop there. Vesartem min haderech asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom. And you will move away from the path which I have given to you today. To follow foreign gods whom you haven't previously known. That's the curse. That's terribly frightening, because it seems that the choice is listening to Torah or Avodah Zarah. Nothing in between. If you're not going to listen to Torah, then you're going to be involved in Avodah Zarah, in idolatry of some form or another. And that fits in with something that we learned a couple of weeks ago. You remember in the second part, paragraph of the Shema, also from last week's Sedra. Where it says, Hishomru lachem, be very careful, pen yifte levavchem, in case your heart turns aside, v'tzartem, and you turn away, v'avadtem elikim acherim, and you'll serve other gods, v'ishtachavisim lahem, and you will bow down to them. Says Rashi, Hishomru lachem, Vesartim, what does Vesartim mean? You'll turn away. Lifroish min haTorah. You'll turn away from learning Torah. Umitoich kach, and as a result of having turned away from learning Torah, Va'avadatem elikim acherim. The Torah is telling us a fact. You will end up serving foreign gods. It's a natural consequence. Stop learning and you'll be in Avodah Zarah. Shekivan she'odom poirish min haTorah, because the moment a person leaves Torah, hoylech umedabek ba'avodas elilim, he becomes attached to idolatry. Frightening things, these. We discussed it in quite some detail a few weeks ago, but just frightening concepts. There is no such thing as a frum Jew who's an Amoritz. He's an idol worshipper. It's not shaykh, it's not possible to be a frum Jew and not be actively and dynamically involved in learning, because you've got to get that fulfillment somewhere else. And if you're getting spiritual fulfillment somewhere other than Torah, you're on idolatry. That is idolatry. Leave Torah. You land up cleaving to some other form of fulfillment, of spiritual fulfillment. And we discussed in the ladies' studio this morning the concept that if one doesn't find spiritual fulfillment in one's Torah, one looks for one's spiritual fulfillment out of Torah. And where do you find spiritual fulfillment out of Torah? In all sorts of weird practices. Magic and mystery and all sorts of things, whether religious or frum or not frum, it makes no difference. One starts making everything very mysterious and romantic, because that somehow feeds one's spiritual cravings. But that's not where it's meant to come from. One's spiritual cravings is meant to come from a normal day-to-day living, which is a spiritual living. But for that, you've got to be living on depth. Be that as it may, what is shattering in this opening passage of this week's Sedra is that there are two choices before us. One is bracha and one is klala, blessing and one is curse. Blessing is simple, just listen. Hear the Torah. Curse is if you don't listen. The result of that is that you will be serving idolatry. Now it doesn't really say va'avadatim, it doesn't say you'll be serving idolatry, but it does say lalechis acharei elokim acherim asher lo yadatim, that you will be going after other gods which you didn't know previously. Which might mean that you don't even serve idolatry, but in your mind there are idolatrous thoughts if you don't listen to the Torah. What we're really going to concentrate on is why this difference, why the brocha comes simply if you listen, and the klola is not just if you don't listen. But God waits for the consequence of your not listening. And the consequence of your not listening is idolatry. When you're onto idolatry, that's when you get the curse. The curse should be the corollary of the blessing. The blessing is for listening, the curse should be for not listening. But it doesn't work like that. Says the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Mem, Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Asi, Afilu choshav odom la'asos mitzvah v'ne'enas. Even if a man planned to do a mitzvah and he was had an oines, there was an emergency, something got in his way, he couldn't do the mitzvah. He planned to do whatever mitzvah it was, planned to buy a lulav and esrog and to shake his lulav and esrog in the coming sukkahs, and for some reason totally beyond his control, he's got no lulav and esrog. The lawyer saw, and he doesn't do the mitzvah. Male olav akosuv ke'ilu aso. The Torah regards it as if he did do the mitzvah. It's counted fully as if he did the mitzvah. If a man plans to do a mitzvah and something gets in his way and he can't do the mitzvah, that doesn't take away. It's as if he's done the mitzvah. Machshov ro, but if a man plans to do an aveira, right, he plans to go out tomorrow and have a real juicy fat trefa steak. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzarto l'maase. If something happens and tomorrow his chavrusa phones him up and says, let's learn, and they get involved in their learning, and completely beyond his control he finds he's missed the time and the restaurant's closed, no more trefa steak for him. So one might think the Ribbono Shel Olam will say, it's going to count as a trefa fat steak in your stomach because you planned to do it and it wasn't your doing that you landed up not eating it. No, that's what Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't do. An aveira, you only get penalized when you actually do it. A mitzvah, you get the reward for as soon as you've thought it, planned it, even if it lands up that you haven't done it. And the Gemara goes on discussing this. And there are two exceptions. Gemara asks from a pasuk that seems to imply differently. Omer Rav Acha b'Yakov ha'u ba'avodes kochovim hu dichtiv. Omer Mar ha'moide avodes kochovim. The Omer Mar chamuro avodes kochovim shekol ha'koyfer bo k'moide b'chol ha'toyra kulo. Avodes kochovim, idolatry is so severe that anybody who denies idolatry, it's as if he accepts the whole Torah. And contrarywise, obviously, anybody who accepts idolatry is rejecting the whole Torah. And therefore, idolatry is an exception. If you plan to go and bow down to a little idol tomorrow and your chavrusa came and took you away and you didn't have an opportunity to do that, then it's still counted against you. So idolatry is an exception. So what have we got? If you plan to do a mitzvah and you have an emergency and you can't do the mitzvah, it's counted as a mitzvah. You plan to do an aveira and you have an emergency, it's not counted as an aveira unless it was idolatry that you planned to do. Ula Omar Kedravuna. Ula says there's another exception. The Omar Ravuna, Kivan She'ovar Odom Aveira Veshonobo, Hutraloi. Once a man does an Aveira and repeats it, it becomes permissible to him. Hutraloi Sarkadaita, does that mean it really becomes permissible? Chas Vesholo. Elona says Loi Keheter. It becomes as if it is permissible to him. He takes it more lightly. And therefore, says Ula, in that case also God will be Matzarif Machshova L'maisa, God will regard the thought as the Aveira, even if you never got around to doing the Aveira. If it's in a case where it's an Aveira which you've done several times previously, right, then God counts it already. So if you've eaten a few juicy steaks already and tomorrow is just another one of those days and your Chavrusa gets in the way, that's sad luck, it counts against you even though you didn't eat it. And by the way, when you get yourself into that kind of position, don't say to yourself, well, if it already counts against me, I might as well go and do it and have the benefit of it as well, because then it gets even worse. So we've got here again a machshava tova, a good thought God considers as an action if you were unable to bring it to fruition. A bad thought God does not consider as an action if you were unable to bring it to fruition, with two exceptions. The one is avodah zarah, idolatry. The other is if it's an aveira which you have done frequently before. It seems to be one other exception. Sorry, Gemara Shabbos. The Gemara discusses Vayiktsas Moshe al Pekudei Achayel. When Moshe sent out the Jews a few sedras ago to wipe out the Midianites, and they came back with the women and children alive. And Vayiktsas Moshe got angry at the officers. Omer Rav Nachman Omer Rabba Bar Avua, this is in Shabbos Daf Samach Dalad Amud Aleph. Omer Lehen Moshe LeYisrael, what was it that Moshe got angry about? What did Moshe say to Yisrael? Shemo Chazaltim LeKilkulchem HaRishoin. Oi, what's happened? Maybe you're back to your old Averos. Don't forget it was the Midianites who seduced them. Bilam's big idea. It was the Midianites who seduced them. Later on he sends the soldiers to wipe out the Midianites. What happens? He goes to meet the returning army and they've wiped out all the men and they're coming back triumphantly with the women. The women were the ones that really should have been wiped out. So what Moshe is really worried about is that Chas v'Shalom, they were again attracted and seduced by these women. He sent them to fight, like Lahavdil, the story with Uncalus, where they sent the Romans, sent all these soldiers to try and bring Uncalus back to Rome, you'll remember, and whoever went was converted to Judaism. Uncalus converted them all. So Lahavdil, that's what Moshe was worried about. That he sent this army to wipe out the Midianites, and particularly the Midianites' women. What happens? They wipe out the men and they come back triumphantly with the women. Amrullah, they said, Loi nifkad bimenu ish. No man was killed, no Jew died in this war. So you see, it was a milchemes mitzvah. What we did was right. So why are you bringing a sacrifice? Because they came back and they brought a korban for atonement. Amrullah, they said to him, in midei aveiro yotzon, we didn't do aveiro. But midei hirhur lo yotzon. But to have naughty thoughts, that's what some of us did. We weren't that clean. Now, after all, these women were particularly attractive, and you know that, and they got us last time, and it's not that easy just to wipe them out without a thought. So Chas v'Shalom, not a single person touched one of the women. Bad thoughts they had. So we need to bring a sacrifice for the thoughts. Why do they need to bring a sacrifice for the thoughts? After all, haven't we just learnt that machshava ro, a bad thought, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't consider as an action? And they didn't do anything, it was only a thought, so what do they have to bring a sacrifice for? So we seem to have a third exception. We have one exception is when you've done the Aveira several times before. The second exception is when it's idolatry. And the third exception is when it's sexual immorality. When it's mis. Those are the three exceptions. And how far it goes, to what extent God is prepared to consider a thought as the action if it's in one of these areas. The Tanchuma says in Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu. Imagine anybody as great as Avraham Avinu and somebody who suffered so much to get to where he got to. The way he worked on himself, talking about a fish against the stream. And there wasn't anybody else in the whole world who believed what Avraham believed. He had to start off fighting every accepted trend in the entire world. He didn't have one ally. And he started, and he got Eliezer and a few friends and his family, and slowly, slowly, slowly he builds up. And he's got no children and he has no future, and you know what it is. And one thing after another, he's thrown into the burning furnace, and he gets out of that, and one trial and tribulation after another. Asks the Medrash, Yilandeinu Rabbeinu Ha'oilo Al Mohoi Sabo, what do you bring a korban oilo for? Oilo is one of the sacrifices that used to be brought. Chatos, we know, if you do something wrong, you bring a korban chatos. A tomid, you bring every day. A musaf, you bring on Shabbos and Yom Tov. What do you bring an oilo for? Kach shomer Rabbi Yishmael, al oilo baal mitzvah saseh, val mitzvah lo taseh. You can bring an oilo for not doing what you should have done, or for doing what you shouldn't have done. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai omer al hirur halev. You bring an oilo for a bad thought. So again we see that there are times where for a thought you do have to have kapora, you do need atonement. And we know now which thoughts those are. It's either a thought for an avera which you've done several times before, or it's a thought for idolatry, or it's a thought for znus. Atamotse Avraham haya maharer achar midas hadin. You find Avraham, after all, questioned in his mind, he never even verbalized it, just questioned in his mind, God's justice. What did Avraham say? Rabbi Levi Omer, kumedume ani. Avraham once said to himself, to nobody else, just to himself, I think, it appears to me, shekibalti kol schori ba'olam hazeh, that I've already been paid off completely in this world. God helped me against the kings, and he saved me from the furnace. Whatever I've got, whatever reward I've got has been paid to me already. And I fear that I don't have reward for Olam Haba. That's not an unjustified feeling. There is such a thing that a person has to worry and be afraid that he's being paid off in this world. There is such a fear. Now, Avraham expresses that fear. Omer le'Akadosh Baruch Hu, this old man, Kivan she'irhalta acha ma'asai, since you've questioned my deeds, Oilo atot solich, you've got to bring a sacrifice. What sacrifice does Hebrew have to bring? Kachno es bincho es yichidcho, Yitzchak you have to bring. That's the sacrifice. That's how you're going to atone for this terrible thing that you did. What did he do? One thought crossed his mind, maybe chas v'sholem, I don't have an Olam Haba anymore. That's all that crossed his mind. For that he has to bring a korban olam. What's so terrible about the thought? It goes against the Rambam. Where the Rambam says, and this is a very important Rambam to bear in mind, and that is very encouraging. The Rambam is the Mefarish HaMishnayos at the end of Makos. Me'ikore ha'emuno, says the Rambam. It is one of the principles of faith, batoira. Ki keshe yekayim odom mitzvah mitaryag mitzvah is keroi uchahoygen. If a man is mekayim one of the 613 mitzvahs properly, completely, v'lo yeshatef imo kavono mikavono toilo, b'shum poni. And not only does he keep it meticulously in its physical demands, but in the kavonas, in the intention, he doesn't insert one strange and foreign intent and motivation. In other words, even subconsciously, it's pure. Elo she'yaseh iso lishmo mi'ahavo. But he does that one mitzvah for the sake of God out of love. Kamo shebi'ati l'cho. As I've explained to you. It is a foundation principle of faith that hine zocho bo l'chaye ha'olam haba. That this man has deserved Olam Haba. And that's why he goes on to say that Rabbi Hananya ben Akashya says that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to be good to the Jewish people, and that's why he gave him up many mitzvahs. Because with so many mitzvahs, the chances are that every Jew will find one mitzvah that he has kept properly. Tfilin or Tzedakah, or Kashrus or Chesed, or Loshon Hara or Shabbos. Something he'll find that he's kept properly. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us so many mitzvahs. So that somewhere or other everybody will find their niche, they'll find a mitzvah for themselves that they're keeping properly. Rav Eli always used to tell us in the yeshiva that everybody should try and choose a mitzvah with which they identify most and become a specialist in that one mitzvah. They should learn everything there is to be learnt about that mitzvah. They should study how other people have practiced that mitzvah. Each person should have one pet mitzvah for which they're absolute specialists. That there's nobody in the world who knows more about this study or practice of that one mitzvah, because that's all you need to get to Olam Haba. The rest all adds to it, but to get to Olam Haba, all you need is one mitzvah carried out correctly throughout one's life. So we see the power of this machshava, the power of the thought, that where God does choose to consider the thought as an action, look to what extent that poor Avraham Avinu had to go through the ordeal of nearly bringing his son as a sacrifice in order to have kapora, in order to atone for a thought crossing his mind. What was the thought? It was against that little Rambam which we've just learnt. Rambam says it's a basic principle of faith that if you do one mitzvah properly, you've got Olam Haba. No matter what, God pays you back. One mitzvah properly, you've got Olam Haba. How could Avraham Avinu have thought that maybe he won't get Olam Haba? Despite his modesty, it's really an expression of tremendous modesty that he should have been worried about such a thing. God, looking at it, says that's not modesty. That's idolatry. That's on Avraham Avinu's level, that's a touch of Avodah Zarah. Chas v'sholem, a touch of apikursis. Because you're questioning one of the foundations of the belief. And you have to bring an oilah. Because in that area, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu regards a thought as a deed. That's one of the three exceptions. If your thought strikes at the basis of the Jewish belief, God regards that thought already as being wrong. Let's understand quickly why these three things are exceptions. Well, let's understand first why the Ribbono Shel Olam is not Metzaref Machshava Ro L'maisa. If you have a bad thought, why does God not consider it that it has been done already? Very simply, because there is a strange barrier between wanting to do something and doing it. there's an inhibition in a person to doing wrong. And he can even have decided he's going to do it. And he's worked himself up into a state, he's going to do it, he's going to rob the bank. And he goes there with his pekulach of tools and he stands outside and he looks at the building, he looks at the people walking past, and he walks back to his car. Not going to do it. There's enough crime in the world, but I can assure you one thing, that if one would look at the machshava of crime, every time, imagine that every time you said, I want to wring their neck, imagine the Ribbono Shel Olam considered that as murder. I want to wring somebody's neck, you do want to, but you don't. And even if you actually get your hands on their fat neck, to actually squeeze, people don't do it. It's just normal people don't do that kind of thing. There's some kind of barrier between wanting to do wrong and actually doing wrong. We don't do it. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared to say, look, okay, you want to wring somebody's neck. It's not a nice thing to want, but I'm not going to count it as if you did it because I know you won't do it. Three exceptions. Let's look at the exceptions. Firstly, let's look at Avodah Zorah. Avodah Zorah. Now, first let me look at the first one, where if you've done the Avera several times, God does consider it as if you've done the action. Says Rabbeinu Yonah in the beginning of Shaarei Tshuva, discussing what's wrong with delaying tshuva, why you've got to do it quick. And he says, the one reason is, ki ashoneh b'chet'o, if a man persists in his Avera, he does it and he does it and he does it, tshuvato kasheh, his tshuva becomes very difficult later on. Don't think tshuva becomes easier. As you do it more and more, the tshuva becomes more and more difficult. And just sort of this type of the time of the year, I must warn you that as hard as it is to stop yourself doing an Avera, believe you and me, doing tshuva is harder. It requires more self-discipline and more effort to do tshuva than to stop yourself doing the Avera. So just bear it in mind. Tshuva is not easy. Why does the tshuva become difficult? Because the Avera starts becoming acceptable. And therefore his sin becomes very much heavier and very much more severe once it becomes permissible. If a man does an Avera and he feels embarrassed about it, it's bad, but at least he feels embarrassed. But when you do an Avera and you no longer feel embarrassed about it, then it's really bad. Rebellion always used to speak about the strange anomaly in the laws of adultery, that a woman who is only betrothed, is not yet married, if she commits adultery, she gets skilo, she gets the worst of the four death sentences. She's stoned. If a married woman commits adultery, she gets chenek, the lightest of all the death sentences. Between chenek, there's chenek, which is the lightest, and then there's hereg, which is the guillotine, which is more severe, and then there's srefo, which is the firing squad, which is more severe, and then finally the skila, which is the most severe of all. And skila is what the woman gets when she's betrothed, whereas when she's married she only gets chenek. And he used to ask why, and he used to answer simply, a woman who is betrothed doesn't live with her husband, she lives on her own or with her parents. So when she's having an affair, she has no fear that the husband will walk in. It's not his place. So she does the Avera without a feeling of conscience and fear. Whereas the woman who's married is worried all the time. She doesn't enjoy it to the full because it's just, maybe he'll walk in, maybe he'll find me. And that reduces her level of Avera 4 degrees. Right down from Skila, through Srefa, through Hereg, to Chenek. Just that fear already removes some of the severity of the Avera. It's still pretty bad, but it's removes a bit of the bitterness of the severity. And so one sees here, also says Rabbeinu Yonah, once you're doing an Avera without that feeling of Oy Gevalt, what have I done? Then it starts becoming severe. Kemo she'ne'emar, as it says in Yirmiyah, Hinei dibarta, posuk in Yirmiyah, you planned, you talked, vata'asi haraot, and you did the wicked thing, you planned to do it, and you did it, vatuchal, and you found you were able to. And Rabbeinu Yonah goes on to develop this. One should learn this little paragraph of Rabbeinu Yonah. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, once you've done an Avera, you find that that barrier goes, disappears. You don't rob a bank because of that funny barrier, whatever it is that stands between you and actually doing the Avera. But if you overcome that barrier one way or another, and you go and you rob the bank, and you're successful and you get away, it's not that difficult the next time. And the third time it's still easier. One loses that inhibition. You look at a very tall mountain and it's huge. And then you climb up it. It takes you 2 days to get to the top. And a day and a half to come down. And when you come down, you look at it again and it's not so big anymore. When you've done something, it's not that big anymore. Somehow there's a fear of something new, of something which you haven't yet done. And that places a certain barrier between you and it. Particularly when you know it's wrong or you know it's hard or whatever it is. But that barrier disappears once you've tried, once you've done it several times. Therefore the Gemara says, while the Ribbono Shel Olam does not regard a thought as action, when it's an Avera which you've done several times before, he does. Because why doesn't he regard the thought as action? He knows that there's still a tremendous barrier. You want to do the Avera, but he knows when it comes to Tachlis, you won't do it. But a man who's done it many times before, if he wants to do it, he'll do it. There's nothing between him and the Avera now. One's removed the barriers. That's the terrible thing about doing an Avera the first time. It's a terrible thing. Because not only are you doing the Avera, that one can do tshuva for, one can fix doing the Avera. But you're ruining an experience for the rest of your life. You're removing that iron curtain between you and that little bit of wrongdoing. And that changes one's whole relationship to that Avera and to Averas in general. What about Avodah Zorah? Avodah Zorah too. What is the barrier in Avodah Zorah? Avodah Zorah, you'll remember, we learned once, started off as a big mistake. Started off L'Shem Shemayim. People thought that's what God wanted. Since God created the sun and the moon and all these wonderful things, surely He wants us to honor the sun and the moon. And that's how idolatry started. It was a mistake. Idolatry is the result, it is the consequence of an intellectual mistake. To have a wrong shittah, to believe something which is not correct in Torah, to base yourself on knowledge which is not accurate, and then to develop your actions on that incorrect knowledge, that's Avodah Zorah. It's a religion which is not genuine. And it comes from an intellectual mistake. So once you've made the intellectual mistake, then again there's no barrier between the wrongdoing and the thought. Avodah Zorah, the barrier is in the thought. And the moment the thought has gone cockeyed, the barriers are gone. It's different to all other Averas. If I've miscalculated intellectually, I'm on my way to doing wrong. Must be. Obviously, I'm going to act in accordance with my beliefs. And if my beliefs are wrong, what are you going to say? No, it's just a belief. Don't worry, he hasn't acted. It's a mistaken belief, and on a mistaken belief, men act. It's not like an Avera where I say, I know it's wrong to rob a bank, but I want to. Then there's a certain conscience which stands between me and the action. But where I develop a philosophy which says it's not even wrong to rob a bank, or whatever philosophy it is, but it's not a genuine Torah philosophy, then obviously I'm going to act on that philosophy. And the Ribbono Shel Olam regards it as having been done. The third one, and the most difficult one, what about Znus? Why is it considered Znus? Why is the thought of an immoral act considered already as if you've done it? There too, unfortunately, the thought of Znus is very different to the thought of every Avera. And without getting crude, the only way I can describe it to you is watch the men sitting in a public place as a pretty young lady walks down, walks past them. Just watch their eyes. They're not looking at her the same way as you look at a pig rolling in the mud when you want your fat steak. It's not the same way that you're looking. When you want to do an Avera, you want to eat a steak, you don't look at the steak the same way as those men look at that woman. What's the difference? When you've decided you're going to eat the steak, you put it out of your mind. You've decided it's wrong to eat the fat steak, but you want to. So you're going to. Tomorrow you're going to such and such a restaurant, and you're going to have the time of your life. Okay, then you stop and you carry on doing what else you're going to do. That's the end of it. But it's not like that with Znus. With Znus, they're actually living the whole action. Step by step, their imagination is working to full capacity. And they're living through the whole thing. not just a thought, it's not just a machshav, a plan, tomorrow I will do something. I will try and attract her attention. I will try and invite her to dinner. That's not what it is. It's not an intellectual plan. It's an imagination, an imaginary living of a whole situation which they desire. That's not machshava, that's called hirhur. That's a different thing, and that's also one isn't allowed to do that. That itself is the avera. To plan to do an avera is one thing. God doesn't take that terribly seriously. But to live the avera through, with all your imagination and all your feeling and all your sexual impulses, that you can't have at all. That's grob. That's an avera itself. That's why we have these three exceptions. If it's an avera which you've done previously, that barrier is not there. If it's avodah zarah, if it's idolatry, once you've made the intellectual mistake, once you've got the thought, you're on the road. And if it's znus, the very thought of it is what is the issue. The very thought of it is already the prohibition. One isn't allowed to have such thoughts. Let us look at the other side, the positive side. Very strange Gemara in the light of all this appears in Bava Metzi on Daf Pei Vav. It's a well-known Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, says Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, Kol ma she'oso Avrom la'meloche ha'shores ba'atzmoy, whatever Avrom did to those angels, remember the three angels who came to visit him on that very hot day when he was feeling in terrible pain, he was a man of 99 years old, and he just had a bris milah which he had to give himself. He's just circumcised himself. It's the third day of the circumcision, which is the worst. It's the hottest day of the century. And Avraham wants visitors. So these three people walk down the road and he looks at them, and to him they appear like Arabs. Three Arabs walking down the road. Three Bedouins. Whatever Avraham did to those angels, quote, stroke Arabs, on his own, ba'atmo, whatever he did himself, also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Levonov Be'atzmo, God did a similar act to Avram's children, also himself. And whatever Avram did by messenger, also HaKadosh Baruch Hu Levonov Al-Yedei Shaliach, God also did by messenger. For example, the El HaBokor Rots Avram. Avram ran to get to Shechtz Matan for these visitors. V'ruach Noso Me'ez Hashem. And we're told also in the Torah in Bamidbar, God brought a wind which brought the slav which brought them the meat. Vayikach chemo v'cholov, and Avram himself went to get the butter and the milk. This is Avram Avinu, who was a king, was a wealthy man, he was a prince. Three Bedouins walk into his house. I always say the only way you can understand that parsha of Chumash in our sense is three Africans, but not three Africans from Soweto. Three Africans from the plas, real farm Africans walking down the road. Avraham Avinu himself, he doesn't know they're angels. He gets the meat and he gets the milk and he gets the butter. And as a result of that, Hineni mamti lachem lechem min hashamayim, God brought the manna as a result of that. V'hu oimed aleim tachat ha'etz, and Moshe stands there, these Africans from the farm are eating at his table, and Moshe stands there with his red sash and his tray, serving them. And Avram stands there with his red sash and his tray, serving these three Africans. And as a result of that, because he stood by them, Avram, I will stand with you there by the rock. When it's finally time for them to go, Avram sees them down the road. God escorted the people of Israel. But yukach no mi'at mayim, this 99-year-old prince, one thing he didn't do for them, he didn't wash their feet. Instead he brought them water, he said, please, take for yourselves some water and wash your feet. Because of that, v'hikita batzur v'yotzu mimenu mayim, you Moshe hit the rock and the water will come out. I won't do that directly. I'm not going to go into the whole Kabbalistic meaning of God doing something by a messenger and God doing it directly. We'll do that some other time. But it's unbelievable the differences and the consequences of God doing it himself or doing it by a messenger. Major consequences. What causes this difference? These little actions of Avram. Look at it. It's unbelievable how significant a man's actions are. Little things that you're doing in your kitchen can affect the world's history. And the quality with which you do them can affect the world's history. Just how you do it, with what state of mind. One thing he slipped on. Yukach no miat mayim. He didn't wash their feet. And God retorts with not giving the water directly either. Why do you think he didn't wash their feet? I think because he was sitting and reading the newspaper. Says the Alta from Slabotka, because he was busy with the meat. He wanted to have the meal ready. By the time they came out of the shower, the meal should be on the table. That's the only reason he didn't. So what greater example have we got of a man who had a plan, who wanted to do it all himself? Venenas, he couldn't. There was no way he could serve them with the speed he wanted to and wash their feet as well. So why doesn't God consider Avraham's good intention, his machshava tova, why doesn't he consider it as if it was acted upon? Why does God punish us later on and not serve us the water himself because of Avraham? Surely Avraham should be considered as essence of the whole thing. What does the Gemara mean? Machshava kemaisa, you have the thought, God regards it as the action. So tell me, if I plan to build the Beis HaMikdash, I'm going to build the Beis HaMikdash, but I can't, we don't have a Torah Aduma. Nenas, there's something beyond my control. I would build the Beis HaMikdash if I could, but there's no Torah Aduma. Do you think I'm going to get the reward as having built the Beis HaMikdash? No ways. Why not? God considers the thought as if it were executed. Why? Having learnt the converse, having learnt about the averas, the bad thoughts, we can now understand the good thoughts. Clearly, because there is no mechitza, there is no barrier between a good thought and its action. And were it not for the emergency, it's clear that you would have done it. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam is metzaref machshava tova lemaaseh. That's why God attaches a good thought as if it were actually done. Because if it weren't for that thing, you clearly would have done it. That must be the reason. Mathematically, that must be the reason. But psychologically, I look at that and I get upset. But that's just what we're complaining about. How often does it happen that we have good intentions and we don't do it without emergencies? So how is it that God's prepared to take it so for granted that a good thought will definitely be translated into a good action? It depends how you think. And here we have the essence of how to do it. I'm going to give you a key. I'm going to give you the means, and believe me, it works, of how to become great. Of how to do whatever you want to do. As long as it's possible, as long as it's feasible. I'm going to tell you now how you can do it. Simply, we learn from the averas. If that barrier in the avera disappears, then God considers the bad thought as if it were actually done. Okay? What causes the barrier to disappear? If we can find that out, we'll have the secret to doing the mitzvahs too. Averas, I understand, is something that gets in the way between me and actually doing the avera. And that's what saves me. But there are certain things which cause this barrier to drop. There are three things which cause this barrier to drop. If I can utilize those three things for my good intentions, I'll cause that barrier to drop and I'll solve the problem of the gap between the thought and the action. So let's examine what the three things are. The first one is repetition. Do it over and over again and the barrier starts dropping. You might say, oh, clever. Our problem is to do it once. You tell me do it over and over again. Yeah, okay, we'll solve that one too. The next thing is Avodah Zarah. Once your thought is cockeyed, the Avera is natural. So to drop the barrier, you need intellectual analysis. You've got to plan it. It's got to be thought out well. The action must be thought out. You decide that tomorrow you want to go to America, you can do it, but you have to plan it. It has to be well thought out. Where are you going to get your ticket by tomorrow? Have you got the money to pay for tomorrow? When you get to America, have you got a place to stay? You've got to think this all out. You've got to plan and plot it. The same as the thought in idolatry puts you on the road to the Avera, so if you've planned your mitzvah properly, you're on the road to the mitzvah. And the third thing we're going to learn, believe it or not, from Znus.
why is the case of sexual plotting and scheming considered as the Aveira itself? Because you're not plotting and scheming. You're actually doing it. Except you're doing it in your mind. That's why it's the Aveira. Here we have the key. Before they send a man to the moon, what do they do? Number one, it's meticulously planned. Now, can you think of anything more weird? Send the man to the moon. Can you think of anything more out of man's reach? Just put yourself, I don't know, 10, 15 years back, whenever they decided to go to the moon. It was crazy when Kennedy announced, we're going to the moon. The man's meshuggah going to the moon. It just didn't seem feasible. So what do they do? Number one, it's planned with meticulous detail. Every little part, they designed things which we're benefiting from now, all sorts of little microchips and mini computers and calculators, are all just things that were thrown out of design rooms, producing exactly what they wanted and what they needed for every little corner of that spaceship. Everything was on the drawing boards precisely. From the training of the astronauts, the constructing of the machines, the fueling of them, the guiding of them, the photographic systems, everything that could possibly occur was thought of, pre-planned, contingencies arranged, down to the last detail of bringing them back and reintroducing them to normality and everything. All planned down to the last detail. So the one thing is that they had that Avodah Zorah element. They had the intellectual application to plan it all, to see that intellectually it all worked. Number one. Number two, they have to practice. How are you going to get a man to the moon if he hasn't practiced a few times? And not a few times, a few hundred times. The man has to be able to do it literally in his sleep. There's no way that they would spend that kind of money on a man who didn't know what he was doing and couldn't do it in his sleep. So we have the same problem. Yes, all very well. We're trying to get to the moon and you're telling me practice 500 times. Where practice? No problem, say the scientists. We'll make simulators. We'll make it as if you're on the moon. That's all. You think you're on the moon, it'll be exactly the same to you. And they design a system of simulation. And the man practices it over and over and over and over again. One of the astronauts actually commented when he came down, he said, it was so familiar, there was nothing new in the whole experience. Nothing new. It was simulated so perfectly that even the experience of going into reality didn't move him. Because he said he's done it 600 times before in the last 5 years. What's the big deal? There was no difference between the simulation and the real thing. That's how he gets his practice. Now the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a simulator too. And the simulator we see from the practice of Zeus. Imagination, go through the motions. If you can do it for Aveira, if you can do it for wrong, do it for good as well. And this system is used by the psychologists in all forms of training. If a man is nervous about public speaking, they just get his imagination to work and he stands up in front of an imaginary audience hundreds of times before he finally delivers his speech. And they make him imagine every detail. He's got to describe the audience sitting before him, how many people they are, what they look like, what they're dressed in. So his imagination is working and he's really standing in a simulated way in front of his audience. And then once they've got the simulation, then starts the repetition now, over and over and over and over again. Comes the time when he's got to stand before the real audience. He's done it 200 times before, it's no hassle. His nervousness is gone, he doesn't stutter, he doesn't stammer, he doesn't forget his lines, no problem, it's all there. How do they practice for these plays? Thousands of times, over and over and over again, without an audience. But if they for one moment realize that they're standing there without an audience, they won't practice properly. The only way they can do their rehearsals is by believing, make-believe that they're standing in front of an audience. That's simulation. The human being has the capacity to simulate any experience he chooses just by utilizing his imagination. So now you want to know how to make it work? Very simple. If it works for the moon, there's no mitzvah which is more difficult than the moon. And if they could use the system for the moon, they can use the system for anything. What do you want to do? Let's say you want to, after the shiur tonight, let's take something hard. After the shiur tonight, when you've had a rough Shabbos, you're going to sit down for 3 hours and learn a black Gemara. It's rough. Now, what we've been doing normally is you say to yourself, because you're very inspired, it's Rosh Chodesh Elul after all, and when's a better time than to start then? Now, when I get home, I'm going to have 3 hours of learning. What happens? You get home and there's a good TV thing on, or there's phone rings and somebody turns up and somebody wants a cup of coffee and the kids start crying and your wife's asleep, so you go to the kids, one thing after the other, 1 hour's gone, 2 hours gone, no, at 11 o'clock to start your 2 hours, you'll learn a little bit and you start learning and you got Nacheshek and you close your Gemara and you go to bed. Tomorrow we'll start, I'll make it up tomorrow. And tomorrow the same thing happens, and the next day the same thing happens, and so we go through our lives letting ourselves down and disappointing ourselves. Now let's try the simulation method, very simple. You can't do it terribly quickly, I must warn you that, you can't just do it like that. What you've got to do is, before you make up your mind, making up your mind the way I've just described is like me making up my mind to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's like Avraham saying, I would like to wash their feet. But Avraham, you can't wash their feet. So don't say you would like to. It's not possible. So sit down and start with the intellectual planning. Is it possible for me to sit tonight and learn for 3 hours? What else have I got on tonight? Have I told anybody to come? Am I expecting any phone calls? Is there anything major that is likely to disturb me? If there is, can I put it off? Can I divert it? Can I change it? Can I get around from it? If there isn't, I've got to cancel my plans for learning. But let's say I've now created all the thing, I've gone through all the possibilities, it's feasible, it is possible, I can do it. So my planning stage is now over. It's not pie in the sky, I'm not dreaming. Okay. Next thing is simulation. Now I've got to close my eyes, privately in a little room, and I've got to imagine myself doing it. And I've got to imagine, as they do in the simulators, everything that can go wrong. Every possible thing that has to go wrong, I've got to simulate going wrong. I've got to come home, and as I come home, everybody's screaming. And as I've sorted out this one, the telephone rings. And as the telephone's finished, I'm finished with the telephone, there's a ring at the door. And you've got to solve each one of those in simulation and make sure that you've come out learning your 3 hours. And then you imagine yourself tired and drained, with a nice bed waiting for you to climb into it and a cup of coffee next to the bed, if you're very lucky and you've got a very nice wife. All the distractions you can possibly imagine just to get you into bed. And you've got to imagine the whole thing through, and you've got to go through the sweat and toil of those 3 hours. And when you've done that, you know what you have to do. You have to do it again. And again, and again, and again. You can do it in a few moments. Doesn't have to take 3 hours. Once you've done it the first time, it will take you 5 or 10 minutes. And the second time will take you only a few minutes, and the third time will take you a few seconds. And then you do it a fourth time, and a fifth time, and you do it 25 times. And you know what? You'll come home, and you'll just handle it, because you've done it so many times before. You're a master at it already. And you'll do it. If you want to get up for davening in the morning, don't say to yourself, tomorrow I'm going to get up for davening. Right, good night. Doesn't work. Say to yourself, is it feasible? Is it possible? If it is or isn't, work out exactly how it can be done. And then simulate. Simulate that tiredness. Simulate the rain outside. Simulate the freezing weather. Simulate all the arguments your Yetzer Hara gives you about why it's really the wrong thing to do to go to davening in any case at this time of the morning. Just go through the whole thing and come out at the end of it winning. And if you didn't come out winning, if you crashed in your simulator the first time, try again and get it right. Figure out why you crashed and fix it the second time and the third time and the fourth time and 10 times and 20 times before you go to bed. And you know what? Your alarm clock will ring and you'll hop out of bed. That's how it works. It's so simple as that. It sounds unbelievably simple, but I tell you it works, and it's used, it's utilized in all walks of life for training purposes. And I in fact learnt this not from Chazal, I learnt it in psychology, and it's only here today that I realized, my goodness, this is the Gemara. This is the Gemara in Kiddushin. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam is Mechashev, is Metzaref Machshava Tova L'Maaseh. Once you understand how to remove the barriers, there is no gap between an action and doing it, if you've practiced it over and over again in your simulator. But don't just have crazy plans and expect to carry them through. And to do anything difficult without practicing is crazy. To go to the moon without practicing is crazy. And to plan to sit down tonight and learn for 3 hours, if it's not something you normally do, if it's not something you're used to doing, it's madness. You won't do it. I'm telling you, you won't do it. Don't let yourself down. Rather, don't make yourself such promises.
And if you're not normally up at the crack of dawn for davening, it's madness to say tomorrow will be different. Why should it be different?
It's through practice and practice and practice that you can change yourself totally. But you need that self-discipline to make your plan, to climb into your simulator and do it over and over again, so that when it comes to the reality, it's old hat, it's no problem. And this you don't have to only have to use in Torah. You can use this in your studying, you can use it in your business, you can use it in whatever you want. There is a way to make a machshava tova maaseh, except for oneness, unless there's an emergency, something totally unforeseen gets in the way. It can happen. It can happen even with a moon project. But barring that, there's no reason why your maaseh tova, why your machshava tova, why your good plan shouldn't be carried out into actuality if you've planned it properly. That's why the Gemara says it doesn't help Avraham Avinu you plan to give them water, but you didn't simulate it because you couldn't simulate it. It wasn't possible to achieve. You're busy cooking. How are you going to simulate the scene? They're hungry waiting. You're in the kitchen cooking and they want a shower. How are you going to do both? You can't simulate it. You can't do it. So that's no machshava. Don't count that as a machshava. Because I, says God, don't count that as a machshava, and later on your children will pay for it. You didn't wash their legs. I don't blame you for it, but you didn't do it. And so it is with all our machshavas. Don't consider it a plan if you haven't practiced it in all its detail tens of times before you undertake it. When you're ready, then undertake it and you'll find that you won't let yourself down. You'll find that you're able to do it. If there's any failures to this system, gentlemen and ladies, I would love to hear about them.